Hebrews 12, starting at verse 1. Therefore, since we are surrounded by such a great cloud of witnesses, let us throw off everything that hinders and the sin that so easily entangles, and let us run with perseverance the race marked out for us. Let us fix our eyes on Jesus, the author and perfecter of our faith, who for the joy set before him endured the cross, scorning its shame, and sat down at the right hand of the throne of God. Consider him who endured such opposition from sinful men, so that you will not grow weary and lose heart.
Thank you, Val. At the start of the first lockdown, way back in March 2020, I decided to set myself a challenge. I decided I was going to run or walk or cycle the length of Hadrian's Wall. Obviously, I wasn't going to go there because, that's a long way and it was lockdown. But it's 90 miles, the length of Hadrian's Wall. And I was going to run, walk or cycle it within 3 months. Now, I wasn't doing it to raise money, like, you know, worthy, wonderful people would. I just thought I would do it because it was a challenge, and what could we do apart from homeschooling? And so I did it, and I got a medal, which was the reason that I entered, actually, because I liked the medal. Wasn't anything worthy about it. It wasn't about getting fit. I just liked the medal. In fact, you also had to pay for the medal, so I bought myself a medal, which I then ran for as well. And it's a wonderful medal. I meant to bring it today, but I forgot. But, you know, it's a great medal, and I really enjoyed it. So the challenge for this week is to create a trophy out of your silver foil, or a medal, a winner's something, something you would achieve in a race. Don't worry about the crunching in the building. It's fine. So I had this medal, and I was really excited about this medal. And when I found the challenge difficult on the days that, although the weather was lovely last year, but on the days when it was rainy, a bit windy, I felt a bit tired, I really couldn't be bothered to go out, this medal kept me going because I thought, I'm going to get a medal and I want that medal. I want to accomplish that. I want to achieve it. I want to say I've done this. I want the prize that I'm going towards. And in some strange way, having the medal that I bought and that I liked motivated me to keep going. So that now that I've finished, I've set myself a new challenge. I don't know what happened there. I've started a new one. 480 miles of running in a year. That's a bit bigger, isn't it, than the 90 miles. The length of the Camino Way in Spain. That's what it is. This one's a lot harder, I have to say. But in the same way, when it's windy and rainy, as it has been a lot this year, and cold, when I'm tired and I don't want to run, I think of the medal I'm going to get, the one that I've bought for the Camino Way. The accomplishment, and it gets me out running every time. Because having something to aim for is really important, isn't it, when we have to do something. Especially on the days when we don't want to do it. I remember, throwback to the 80s, Daley Thompson, who I used to really like, a decathlete, one of our most famous Olympians, he was having an interview and he said, what keeps me going when I'm having to train on Christmas Day when everyone else is inside eating their lunch and enjoying time with family is the thought that I will get that Olympic gold medal and be champion again. And that makes me go out, even on the days when I just want to sit with my family and I don't want to do the training. It gets me out. And I'm sure that's the same for many athletes, if not all athletes and sports people who are in training, because there will be times when they simply don't want to train. They don't want to put the effort in. There'll be times when they're tempted to just have a break from it all. But then that dream of the Olympic medal or the World Championships or the World Cup glory or being top of their sport will spur them on. The dream of lifting a trophy and finishing the race, that becomes their aim. And as we saw, there are many good trophies that you can lift, especially in Indianapolis 500. Because this is important to them. This is what they want. This is what they're working and striving and struggling for and keeping going for. And it's not just people who are training either. It's people who are in the middle of a race, those long distance races that go on for ages. They're struggling along, looking towards the finishing line. And here in the book of Hebrews, this is the picture the author paints of the Christian life, of living our lives for God day in, day out. That, if you like, it's like a race. Not in the sense that it's a speed race, you know, 100 metres or whatever. It's not in the sense that who finished first gets the prize, but in the sense of a long distance run, one that takes commitment and dedication, one that lasts not just a short while, but a long time, the whole of our lives. One that means, as the author states here, that we need to run with perseverance the race marked out for us. And because the Christian life is long distance and needs perseverance, there's also the necessity to remember what we are running towards. Just like athletes who keep their mind on the trophies and the prizes and the achievements, so that is with us. Because it can be tempting at times to lay aside God's call and veer off in a different direction. Or just sit down and give up because it's just too difficult. And so we can look towards the prize to keep us going, towards the finish line. Or as Paul says in the book of Philippians, to keep pressing on towards the goal to win the prize for which God has called me heavenwards in Christ Jesus. Because if we think about following God in terms of a long distance race, as expressed here in the book of Hebrews, the only way we're going to keep going for the whole of our lives is by focusing on the direction in which we are heading, not looking around at all the things around us or behind us, but keeping looking ahead. Keeping looking at the person who we are heading towards, Jesus, the pioneer and perfecter of our faith. Because not only is Jesus our prize and our goal and the finishing line that we're going towards, but he's also the one who has run this course before us. He is the pioneer, as this passage says, the one who has travelled the way that we're going. He's not just watching from the finishing line, not really knowing what the course will do and where we're going, but instead Jesus understands every twist and every turn, every chicane, every water jump, if you like, because he's lived it himself. So that when we experience difficulty in our races and struggling, we can know that he also experienced difficulty and struggled through at times as well. Because Jesus has run the course before us. He knows it, he's travelled it. And not only that, but he's also perfected the course through his death on the cross. Or if you like, he has removed the most difficult hurdles. So that although we will face fatigue and many corners, we'll no longer face those hurdles that we cannot possibly get across. We'll no longer face those things that are too difficult for us to get through. Because Jesus, if you like, has pushed them out the way. He's perfected the course. And so the author urges the readers, us today, to keep our eyes on Jesus. Because if we keep our eyes on him, we can get through our current situation and persevere towards the finish. And if we do find that we struggle and we think at times that we can't go on, we're told to contemplate once more what Jesus has done for us so that we could begin this race in the first place. We're told to remind ourselves of who he is and how he's faced the cross, how he's endured the suffering, how he has looked death in the face and chosen to carry on regardless, so that we can run the race that we're running today. Or as the Message Bible says to encourage us, keep your eyes on Jesus, who both began and finished this race we're in. Study how he did it. Because he never lost sight of where he was headed, that exhilarating finish in and with God. He could put up with anything along the way, cross, shame, whatever. And now he's there in the place of honour right beside God. So when you find yourselves flagging in your faith, go over that story again, item by item, the long litany of hostility he ploughed through, because that will shoot adrenaline into your souls. So we're going to pause as we think about the author and perfecter of our faith, Jesus. We're going to watch a DVD we have watched before here quite a long time ago, which is called That's My King. And it talks a little bit about all the wonderful things that Jesus is, the one that we're heading towards in our race. The author and perfecter of our faith. The book of Colossians describes Jesus like this: We look at this sun and see the God who cannot be seen. We look at this sun and see God's original purpose in everything created. For everything, absolutely everything above and below, visible and invisible, rank after rank after rank of angels, everything got started in him and finds its purpose in him. He was there before any of it came into existence and holds it all together right up to this moment. And when it comes to the church, he organises and holds it together like a head does a body. He was supreme in the beginning, and leading the resurrection parade, he is supreme in the end. From beginning to end, he's there, towering far above everything, everyone. So spacious is he, so expansive, that everything of God finds its proper place in him without crowding. Not only that, but all the broken and dislocated pieces of the universe, people and things, animals and atoms, get properly fixed and fit together in vibrant harmonies, all because of his death, his blood that poured down from the cross. This is Jesus who we head towards in our race. This is the author and perfecter. If you've watched any sport over the past year, 18 months, you'd be very aware of the lack of crowds, live crowds, people in the stadium. It's probably something we really didn't think about before COVID-19, isn't it? The crowds and what they did. But with them removed and suddenly there's nothing, we became very aware of the noise that crowds made and the encouragement that they gave to those competing and the songs that they sang, which was all just part of the competition and the race. It's been especially stark, I think, in football, possibly because I watch it, I don't know. But there was always the crowd noise, whether it was encouraging or booing. I'm not really sure. With West Ham, sometimes it was booing. But, you know, there was the crowd noise there. And it's been stark just hearing the ball kicked and the coaches shouting things and the players saying things to each other. Some teams used to talk about the crowd being like their 12th man, urging them on, an extra player that helped them play better. And you could see that with some teams, that they really did suffer not having the crowds in the stadium. To counter this, some of the teams started playing crowd noises into the stadium while the players were playing. But without people there, it wasn't the same. The emotion, the adrenaline, the level of performance was all a little bit different. Because people being there to support makes a vast difference to the races that are run. And so here in Hebrews, the author is determined to point out the support that we have as Christians. We've been told to keep our eyes on Jesus, but now we're also told that we're surrounded by supporters as well. We're not on our own. We're not struggling along a lonely road. We haven't got like those one or two people clapping every now and again when we turn a corner. But instead, the author says we're surrounded by such a great cloud of witnesses. Or if you like, we're surrounded by those who have already gone before us, those who have already followed the race that Jesus has run, those who have suffered fatigue but kept going till the end. Primarily, of course, the author is talking about those in chapter 11 of the book of Hebrews, the great hall of faith that we've already travelled through over the last few weeks, people such as Abraham and Moses and Rahab and Gideon and David and all those others. But he's also talking about those unnamed followers of God as well, those who have come after. We know some of them from the history books that we read, but also there's people we've never heard of, just like you or I, who are part of this great cloud supporting. But all of these people are not simply supporters in the sense of a football supporter or a sports supporter. You know, they're not cheering one minute if we're doing well and then booing the next if we've made a horrendous mistake like supporters sometimes do. Instead, they're referred to as witnesses. Or in other words, they're people whose lives have shown their commitment to God. They've done this. They know what it's like. They've lived this life. They've run this race. And so if we need encouragement, all we need to do is look to them. Read their stories, hear the voices that come from their struggles. And because we have Jesus to fix our eyes on and this great cloud of witnesses to accompany us, the author here urges us to really go for it, to throw off everything that hinders and the sin that so easily entangles. And to run the race with all our might, not half-hearted, hoping we might get there, but all our might, not holding out, not being distracted, but letting go of things that hinder us so that we can run freely towards the goal. You know, I'm one that always likes to take everything I need somewhere. You know, I don't like to be without. And when I started this whole running thing that I've fallen into over the past year and a bit, I used to like dress with lots of things. Well, it might be cold, or it might rain while I'm out there. Well, my hands might get cold. I'm not really sure. Is it too windy? Do I need a hat? I don't know what to do. And so I dress in all this stuff, and then I get back and be absolutely sweltering, almost, you know, passed out part way through the run. And so Simon said to me, Kate, you just need to chill out a bit. He says that quite a lot for the running. You just need to chill out a bit. You need to start as you want to finish. So you need to dress at the start in what you want to finish in. So you don't want to finish in a woolly hat and a big coat once you've run all that time. You want to finish in a running, just one running top, and you'll be warm enough. And so now I go out sometimes a bit chilly at the beginning, but I dress as I feel I will want to finish. Because that really helps, you're not carrying too much. And similarly, as we run with perseverance, the race marked out for us as Christians, we're encouraged to seek to run without extra baggage, not carrying all our problems and our stresses and our sins that tangle up in our lives, but instead seeking at every opportunity to throw these off and to run dressed in the way we intend to finish this race before God. So that with our eyes on Jesus and the encouragement of the cloud of witnesses in our ears, we can keep going day in, day out, until one day we will cross the finish line with much relief, I'm sure, but also hopefully great joy as well. We're going to spend a few moments in prayer as we think about the race that we are running together as God's people, but also individually. How is our race going? Are there things we are carrying that we needn't carry? Are we wearing too many clothes to finish the race in? Are there things we need to throw off? Let's spend a few moments in quiet as we think about our lives before God and what we carry on this race, and then I'll pray. Wonderful. Well, may God bless us as we continue in our journey, as we run this race, as we keep going. May we know we're not only surrounded by a great cloud of witnesses, but we're heading towards the most wonderful goal. And may God walk with us and be close to us every step of the way. Amen.